buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise. And today we're joined in studio by Jordan Moore and Blake Rainey. Guys, welcome in. Happy to have you on. And we've got a great show ahead of you today. So much to talk about. The NFL draft last night. Thank you to all who tuned in to our Fan Run War Room last night. Really fun time. We did a little double duty last night, Dawson.
Yeah.
We did overtime and we did double overtime. On the War Room. Great time. Thank you so much to everyone who tuned in. Plenty to talk about from the draft. A couple of big surprises. Michael Penix, Atlanta, I don't know what they were thinking. We'll break that down a little bit later. As always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. And we'll talk about how the baseballs came out swinging yesterday in the opener against Missouri. 865-288-3131 if you want to call in and join on our Friday afternoon edition. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is the pick is in. At long last, the NFL draft finally has gotten underway from the city of Detroit. The first round officially in the books, and each of the 32 selections bring a renewed sense of hope to the franchises that made those picks. But plenty of work remains. Rounds 2 and 3 tonight, rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. And each draft reflects a different trend. And this year has a strong offensive flavor to it, because the first 14 picks last night were all offensive members. It took till pick 15, Indianapolis took Latu out of UCLA to stop the offensive trend. Quarterbacks flying off the board at a record pace in the first round, as 5 were taken in the first 10 picks, and another was taken at what was it, 12?
By Denver, 12 yeah, by
so,
the Denver Broncos.
So 6 in total, and Michael Penix was probably the most surprising, going to Atlanta at top 10. At number 8, obviously, J.J. McCarthy going to the Vikings at 10 after they traded up. Another interesting trade there. Kind of came out today, though, that Sean Payton actually was kind of baiting the Vikings into trading, telling the Jets that they were going to trade up and really forced the Vikings' hand to move up. So let's begin with this. Offense, obviously, the theme last night. You know, the NFL over the last couple of years, we've seen offense become more and more the stronger side of the ball because of the rules they're putting in place to try and make the game safer. The middle of the field's wide open. No more Vontaze Burfict-type hits. No more roughing the passer. Now, even this year, we have the hip drop tackle taken out. All of these favor offense, and I think as a result, last night, you saw a lot of that. Dawson, we'll begin with you. Why was offense the theme of the first round last night?
Well, it's a deep, talented offensive class. We talked about that on here last week while we were previewing the draft. This is a ton of pro-ready, immensely talented offensive players at multiple positions. I mean, the quarterback lottery, we were talking about that, you know, yesterday in our draft preview, where we said, you know, we'd see 5 or 6 go in the first 12 picks. Well, they all 6 went in the first 12 picks.
Yeah.
So that certainly doesn't help the defensive player's case. But then you had 3 wide receivers that were more than justified in going in the top 9 picks. And then you had offensive linemen as well. Joe Alt and a couple of others. J.C. Latham going to the Tennessee Titans at 7. A couple of those guys went in those first picks as well, because those guys are worth it. That's the kind of class this is.
Yeah.
That's the kind of talent you have in this class. A lot of highly coveted offensive pieces, and a lot of teams in the top 12 that needed offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 obviously decided they needed quarterbacks, a few decided they needed receivers, and then a few needed offensive linemen. That's just kind of how it worked out, where the biggest need on these teams, like for the Cardinals, my Arizona Cardinals, for example, you needed a wide receiver. That was the home run pick at 4. You weren't picking a defensive player at 4. There's a couple other teams. You know, the Chargers needed Joe Alt. The Titans needed offensive line.
Yeah.
So team needs affected that as well. I wonder if there's maybe some questions around some of those guys. I know there were some injury questions around a few of the defensive pieces. Maybe that went into it a little bit, but it was just such a top-heavy offensive class.
Yeah. Jordan?
Yeah, I agree with what Dawson said. It's, you know, top heavy on the offensive side of the ball. A lot of these teams that did need quarterbacks decided to go ahead and take a run on those quarterbacks. I think it also has a lot to do with what you're talking about, William, with just the way the game is, you know, gearing towards more offense-oriented football. And teams are seeing that trend, so they wanted to try to load up on some skill position players and fill some holes on the offensive end. Because, you know, right now offense is winning, really, in almost any sport you play. Yeah. It's geared towards the offense. I also think, too, kind of looking, you know, ahead to next season, the quarterback class isn't as strong next season. So I think a lot of these teams have decided, okay, if they're in position to go ahead and take a quarterback now, they would rather take a chance on one of these quarterbacks than maybe be in that position and have to take a quarterback next season.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of these quarterbacks are kind of, just my personal opinion, are really close to each other.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, maybe you could say Caleb Williams is kind of really above the rest, but a lot of the rest of them, I think, are kind of right in line with each other. So I think it's why, you know, not a lot of developmental quarterbacks later in the draft either.
Sure.
So a lot of these teams decided to take a chance on some of these. You know, we'll get to Michael Penix here in a minute. You know, that was obviously a surprise pick. But the combination of what you talked about, William, and what Dawson just went over, I think is why you saw the run on all the offensive talent early in the draft.
Yeah, Blake?
Yeah. I like, the more you watch football over the past couple of years, the more offensive-oriented it has definitely gotten. Kind of to compare it, let's see what Danny White hiring Josh Heupel and then Kim Callahan. It's like that's where sports is going.
Yeah.
It's going to the offensive side of the ball. Phrase defense wins championships, I don't think that's true anymore.
Sure.
Because it's just so offensive-driven, and the draft told you how offensive driven minded coaches are.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's definitely hit that era of just pure offense.
Yeah. The surprise of the night came when the Atlanta Falcons selected quarterback Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 in the first round. The former Washington quarterback will enter a position group that includes high profile offseason free agent Kirk Cousins already on the roster. Penix, who turns 24 in May, played his best football with the Huskies, guiding them to last season's national championship game against Michigan. But the pick is puzzling, considering Cousins was just signed this offseason. When the pick was made, I mean, we were all in here on the show. It's like,
we were very surprised.
What in the world? Because I got a, you know, I was, you know, kind of cheating the system. I had some tweets on my phone, and I got a tweet that said Atlanta's about to shock the world. And I was thinking, like, okay, you know, are they going to take a guy that might not be a first-round pick? Are they going to take, like, maybe a J.J. McCarthy? No, it's Michael Penix Jr., and they just signed Kirk Cousins. So I was trying to think of why they would do this. And when you listen to Raheem Morris in the press conference, he says, you know, we're not going to have the opportunity to pick in the first round again.
Right.
Or I guess this high in the first round again with, you know, what we think this team will be under Kirk Cousins. So I understand that angle to a little bit, but the problem is, if Kirk Cousins rides out this contract, Michael Penix will be 27 years of age at the end of it. So, you know, do you want a guy to sit there for 3 years? Michael Penix sure as hell doesn't want to do that. You know, hey, congrats on being drafted 8. You're going to sit on the bench for the next 3 years, 3 to 4 years, right? So I don't really understand that part. And the second thing, this Falcons roster is good now with Kirk Cousins. You've got the offensive weapons, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. Defensively, there were a couple holes on this roster, in particular the edge position. I had Dallas Turner go into the Falcons in my mock.
Too.
Dallas Turner's available. Latu's available. You could have gotten Byron Murphy as well out of Texas. So many defensive options available, and yet you go quarterback. I don't understand it. I thought it was a hilariously laughable pick. I still don't get it right now.
I mean, they said that it was for the future. That's what I heard. I think Terry Fontenot said it after the draft. He said, we're preparing for the future. Well, okay. I mean, the future is going to be, what, 4 years from now? I don't really get that. Again, almost 30 years old by the time he even gets the mantle for the starting job. I can see taking, you know, a fourth-round guy like a Spencer Rattler, a Joe Milton in, like, the fourth round.
Yeah.
When you're just going to sit him on the bench and say, okay, if we have to hit the panic button and break glass in case of emergency, we have a guy sitting there that we can mentor. Okay, cool. But taking him at number 8, when you could take Dallas Turner, when you could take a corner, when you could build your team somewhere else?
Yeah.
I don't get it. My idea is they're prepping in case Cousins gets hurt again, because he went out last year with an injury. He did not finish the season. And in the case that maybe he re-aggravates that injury or he gets a new injury, Then they have Michael Penix, who is 24. He's pro ready. He's got an arm that's ready to go out there. They don't have to then go get Marcus Mariota because that experiment did not work in Atlanta. They have a guy in Michael Penix that's sitting there ready because of Kirk Cousins' injury history. That's the only thing I can think of. Something about Atlanta and lefty quarterbacks named Michael, I guess.
The dogs in Atlanta are a little scared to go out with that news. Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, it confused me. I didn't understand the pick either. You know, you say, okay, maybe they're going to sit him and, you know, try to develop him behind Kirk Cousins. But as you pointed out, Wim, I mean, you know, by the time that contract's over with, you said, what, 27, 28 years old?
Yeah.
What is he going to be? I mean, you know, it's not like you drafted a 20 or 21-year-old.
No.
That, okay, I can understand you develop him for a few years, and then when he gets his time, he's 24.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't understand that aspect of it. And then you just gave a quarterback, you know, a ridiculous contract.
Big-time
so,
money.
I mean, you put yourself in a position to where I just don't understand what you're, what you're trying to do here. As you know, as Dawson pointed out, I mean, if you're going to take a guy that's going to sit behind Kirk Cousins, use that eighth pick and go get you an edge rusher. Go get you a defensive player that's going to make a difference for this roster right now. And then later in one of the later rounds, as he pointed out, take a Spencer Rattler, take a Joe Milton, take another quarterback. And to me, you know, I kind of heard this coming in is, you know, if what the coach said about, you know, we're never going to draft this high again, go get you some talent now. If you expect that you're going to win football games with Kirk Cousins and be in contention for a playoff spot, then that's the opportunity to load up on some guys that are going to help you win. If your plan is to sit Michael Penix, how is that helping you win in the current state with that contract that you're going to have with Kirk Cousins? It's not. Should have drafted somebody like a Jared Verse, like a Byron Murphy, the edge guy from UCLA to help your defense out to where if you do expect that the offense is going to be good with Kirk Cousins, then, you know, you have a chance to make some noise in that division and make some noise in the playoffs. The good point made just a minute ago, maybe the only way you could talk me into this being a good pick would be they expect Kirk Cousins to get hurt again, and now you have a quarterback that you can follow him. But even then, if that's an expectation that you're already having, you should never give him that contract to begin
exactly.
with.
Exactly. Blake?
I was sitting at the baseball game last night, and I was listening to the draft in my ear as I was watching the game. And as soon as they made that pick, I said out loud, I was like, what in the crap? And everyone just turns around and the rows below me and just stares at me.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. What we just said, Kirk Cousins, like $100 million contract?
Yeah.
$100 million contract for 4 years.
Yeah.
But the more that I was thinking about it today, the more I don't think it was that dumb.
Okay.
Because I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here because it is what we just talked about, an offensive-driven league, a quarterback-driven league. And if you kind of think about it, they're set for quarterback for like at least the next 12 years. I don't know if like, because we don't know what Michael Penix is yet.
Yeah.
But what if he is good? Because you look at other examples of Brett Favre and Jordan Rodgers and Smith and Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does work sometimes.
Yeah.
But I can understand why Kirk Cousins would be pissed off.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look very good with Michael Penix coming in.
Yeah.
With Kirk Cousins being mad. So I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, the quote that was given, so Cousins was told when they were on the clock that they were possibly looking at a quarterback, but he was, quote, stunned when the pick was made. I
would be too.
I would be too, you know. So I get the insurance of, okay, you know, if Cousins gets hurt, at least we've got a, you know, a top eight, top ten pick on our roster. But at the same time, what if that top eight, top ten pick doesn't work out in the NFL? I'd much rather get a backup that has experience and that has played before, you know, like a Sam Darnold, like an Andy Dalton. So we're like, if something goes wrong, you've got guys that have played big games before that can come in.
Well, now, as what you're talking about, you know, with Kirk Cousins being upset at the pick, I mean, does that cause chemistry issues from the very beginning in the in the locker room already? You already have a veteran quarterback that you just brought in that you gave $100 million to. Now he's going to be looking over his shoulder every single day.
Yeah.
How does that fly in the locker room? How does that fly in the QB room? You know, like you're already kind of getting off to a bad start there by that dynamic in the quarterback room. So, yeah, I mean, you know, once again, I can kind of understand the developmental aspect of it because, as Blake said, you know, he is right. There are teams out there who have done this before and it has worked.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works for them, like, like he said, they're set for a while.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of reasons why currently with the way that roster is constructed and you giving that money to Kirk Cousins, why just at the time it doesn't make that much sense and why they decided to do that pick.
Now, moving to a team that I thought did really well last night, the Chicago Bears. There was only really one rational path for the Bears to take, and they took it with the top pick and a shot at Williams in hand. The Bears practically gave away well-liked former first-rounder Justin Fields earlier this offseason in an advancement to go bring in Caleb Williams. They also were able to add Roma Dunze out of Washington, a really good receiver. And he now will be alongside Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. They just got DeAndre Swift in the backfield. The Bears quickly have become a very, very good offense. Cole Kmet as well at tight end. Were the Bears one of the biggest winners last night? Because I think they were.
I think they were too. You got your QB of the future at number one, and then you had the wide receiver fall into your lap at number nine. I wasn't sure going into last night because of the Chargers and the Titans if those guys would still be there. We see Neighbors go at six. I figured once Joe Alt went at five, the Titans might look receiver at seven.
Yeah.
They don't. And then he falls into your lap at nine, and now you pair Roma Dunze with a really, really stout receiving room. You've completed the retool of your offense in, what, 2 years? I think they've completely retooled their offense. And it's already been well documented that Williams and Odunze are on the same page. They wanted to play with one another in the NFL. Odunze said before the draft, I can tell Williams has that same determination as I do.
Yeah.
So pairing these two together, we've seen them. They've seen each other a lot on the field already, playing against each other in college. It's a great choice. And one I really did not think the Bears would get to make. The question now will be how the offensive line holds up, how the defense holds up. But the skill players for the Bears, man, they were a big winner last night.
Yeah, J-Mo?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they're a winner last night, especially if you truly believe in what Caleb Williams can do in the NFL and you think he is, you know, the future quarterback, franchise quarterback for the Bears, which they've been looking for a very long time. If they can finally hit on that, they, as you said, they do have the weapons on the offensive side of the football. And then you also go and get a receiver there in the top 10, too, to be able to team those guys together.
Yeah.
Last year they went out and got their right tackle, potentially, you know, and Darnell Wright flipping to left tackle maybe.
Yeah.
So you got your franchise tackle. Now you potentially have your franchise quarterback. You got potentially a franchise wide receiver. So you're starting to develop that offense. So if you know, they've been searching for that franchise quarterback for a very long time. They tried Justin Fields. They tried other quarterbacks. If you have finally hit on that quarterback, the Bears are in a good position. As we just talked about, you know, in our last discussion about the offense,
yes,
how far that is ahead of the defense, and it's gearing towards an offensive league. Well, now the Bears are starting to catch up with the rest of the league with broad receivers, the offensive line, now potentially a quarterback. So, yeah, I think the Bears, you could probably mark them down as one of the – I would say maybe the winner or easily a top five winner of the draft far early.
Blake?
I was sitting next to a Chicago Bears fan last night at the game, and he actually did not like them taking Caleb Williams number one. I mean, you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
He thought that they kind of screwed Justin Fields over and just basically putting him on murderer's row back there.
Yeah.
Because what did he get sacked? What, 65? Yeah, 64, 65 times last year?
Yeah, one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league outside of Daniel Jones, but we know how bad he is.
Yeah, and I know Caleb Williams is slippery and can get away from, you know, tackles and blitzes and things like that. But, I mean, you mentioned Darnell Wright potentially moving to left tackle, and the draft is, of course, far from over. We still got the rest of the rounds starting tonight. Yeah. So you don't know what's going to happen in the draft. A lot of people like to overreact in the first rounds without knowing what's going to happen in the later rounds. But I liked what the Bears did. I think the Bears set themselves up pretty good for the future with offense. Like we've been talking about, offense.
Yeah, yeah. Should be one of the most fun offensive groups in the NFC at least next year. Real quick before we head to the phones, what is a pick that stood out to you in a positive or negative way outside of the quarterback ones we've talked about? My positive one, and you can do positive or negative. I choose positive here. But Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo to Philadelphia. Philadelphia last year really struggled in the second half of their defense, time and time again getting burnt and toasted. They bring in Kevin Byard from Tennessee, and he was a whiff. They've got a dated back end of their defense. Quinyon Mitchell was my highest graded defensive back in the draft. He comes in, he'll make an immediate impact for that group. Quinyon Mitchell to the Eagles, my number one.
I'll do both real quick. Positive, Dallas Turner to Minnesota at 17, just because of how far he fell.
Yeah.
He should not have slid that far. The Vikings, I mean, you get your quarterback only trading up one spot. You don't have to trade up to four like we thought they might. and you get Dallas Turner at 17. I mean, they had one of the best nights of the draft. Negative, I have two. Jordan Morgan to Green Bay at 25. Just a weird pick with several guys left on the board. And then Ricky Pearsall at 31.
Really?
And I know you like Ricky Pearsall a lot, and so do I. A.D. Mitchell was still on the board at 31.
Sure.
I don't like taking Pearsall before him. That's not a stray at Pearsall. Great receiver. Had great moments in college. Going to be a good playmaker, I think, in the NFL. Just was not a first-round pick to me. A weird moment for them to go and get him at 31. When Mitchell was there, some defensive guys were there that are still going to be there tonight. I don't really get it, so that's the negatives for me.
Jordan?
I actually have just a couple real quick. Just a surprise pick for me was the Joe Alt pick with the Chargers.
Really?
Listened to the War Room last night. I think it was just more of all the shows that I listened to, I pretty much pegged him to the Titans.
Yeah.
So in my mind, he was going to be a Tennessee Titan, and for the Chargers to go ahead and take that pick and listening to the shock on the War Room last night was pretty awesome, the live reaction there. This is a surprise pick on my part because I, in my mind, I had him pegged to the Titans.
Okay.
A couple of them that I like is Jared Verse to the Los Angeles Rams.
Yes.
I really like that pick. To team him up with Byron Young, who had a really good year last year. Their edge rushers are going to be very, very good. I like the Xavier Worthy pick to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
They need wide receivers. I mean, they just won a Super Bowl with a lack of wide receivers, and here they go loading up again for Patrick Mahomes. And personally, for me as a Cowboy fan, looking at the Cowboys offensive line, I do like the Guyton pick because they do need some more offensive linemen. And if you look at the Cowboys over the last handful of years, when they take a lineman in the first round, he ends up a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
So they hit on their first round offensive lineman. And if they're able to hit again on another offensive lineman, then, you know, looking at how young they are everywhere else, then they're set up on the offensive line for years to come.
Yeah. Blake?
I'm going to go at number 24, the Lions, with Terrion Arnold.
Okay.
That's pretty positive that he fell that far.
Because
when Joe Alt was off the board for the Titans, and, of course, I'm a big Titans fan, when Joe Alt came off the board and I heard them say J.C. Latham, I didn't hate the pick, but they needed to go left tackle again.
Yeah.
And he's not a left tackle. I mean, he didn't play left tackle at Alabama.
Yeah.
He played right tackle at right side of the line at Alabama his entire career. I didn't hate the Latham pick, but I was really rooting for the Titans to Terrion Arnold or Brock Bowers.
Okay.
So I think the positive for the Lions is getting him that late because I didn't think he was going to fall to 24.
Yeah, good value for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's head to the phones real quick. 865-288-3131. We've got Joshy Boy on the line. Joshy, what's up?
How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Good. So, question, for all of you, but especially J-Mo. So who do you guys think my Titans should pick with that 6th overall pick in the second round starting tonight?
Receiver, maybe? I mean, wait, Keon Coleman? Is he a top second round pick?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought last night you
A.D. Mitchell, I guess, if he's there.
Yeah,
I
mean, if you get Mitchell there, it'll be interesting to see where they fall. I've got the Titans needing an edge and a defensive tackle in addition to the offensive tackle they got last night. If you could get Johnny Newton out of Illinois, he's a guy that I'm really surprised was not taken last night, and he's a guy that can disrupt a backfield very easily. I'd say Jerzon Newton out of Illinois.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking at the cornerback from Iowa.
Cooper DeJean,
I don't know if he'll last that long.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll get him at that point.
I think the Cardinals would take him at 34 or 35, wherever we pick tonight.
I'm curious to see what Rand Carthon does because
– Yeah, I am too.
Because too. Free agency, he pulled a lot of stuff out of the bag. So I'm curious to where he goes in the second round and the rounds beyond.
I think right now, you know, getting Calvin Ridley this offseason in free agency, I don't know if they're prioritizing – wide receivers right now. Right. They might try to get one a little bit later on. And you can hit on those. You know, like a Puka Nacua last year goes a 5th round, you know. And that's not every year that a guy turns out to be that successful. But there are avenues in the later rounds.
Yeah. What about you, J-Mo? Who do you think the Titans should take?
J-Mo, who do you think the Titans should take?
I'm actually thinking, you know, probably a wide receiver. I was just looking at, like, on ESPN at the best available, and they really don't have another offensive lineman, you know, for it looks like 20 more spots that's best available. And you have about 4 or 5 wide receivers sitting right there. You know, as he said, A.D. Mitchell is right there. Keon Coleman is right there.
Ladd McConkey
is right there. I don't hate the Newton pick either. 6'2", 300 pounds. That would be a really solid pick for the Titans there to beef up their defensive line. So for me, I would probably go if Newton is there, probably him. If not, then I would probably take one of these wide receivers because DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin really aren't getting any younger.
I know
they make a lot of money, but they're not getting any younger, and you know that allows you to continue. You got your offensive lineman now. Continue to get more weapons for Will Levis to find out if he is your franchise quarterback of the future. Because that's my kind of thing, too, is if you have somebody like that, like Will Levis, who showed a little bit of flashes last year, get him as much help as possible to know if he is the guy or not.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about this series with Missouri? Because this game tonight, I think if Tennessee wins this game, I think they'll sweep the series with Missouri tomorrow.
Yeah, you like your chances. We're about to break down last night's game here in a second on the next segment. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you win tonight, you'll probably sweep. And, last night was a really good start to the weekend, especially of how hot the bats were.
And with the Florida series next week, it's looking like it's really manageable because they kind of fallen off this season. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much for calling in, Joshy. We always appreciate it. Yeah, Florida hasn't been as successful or as dominant as they have been in years past. So I definitely think that next week is another manageable series for the Vols. And when we come back, we'll talk about the Vaseballs and their hot start to the series against Missouri when we return on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Why? Working on a weekend like usual.
All right, getting ready for the weekend here on Overtime on a Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now time to shift over to the baseballs and how they came out swinging yesterday. Tennessee opened its series against Missouri with a bang, tying a season-high 6 home runs to cruise to a 10-1 win on Thursday night at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. 6 of the Vols' 10 hits on the night left the yard, while all 10 of their runs came via the long ball. UT is now 6 home runs in a game 5 different times this season. Billy Amick picked up where he left off in the midweek with his second straight two-homer game, bringing his total to 16 on the year. The junior third baseman went 3 for 5 and drove in 4 runs, giving him 11 RBIs over his last 2 games. Really good stuff from him. Christian Moore, CMO, continuing his hot weekend last weekend, had another big night at the dish as well, hitting a homer to lead off the bottom of the first inning to get things rolling, marking his 6th home run in his last 6 games. The New York native finished 3 of 4 with a walk and 2 runs scored for the game. And the duo of starting Chris Stamos and reliever A.J. Causey were excellent on the mound yesterday, combining for 9 strikeouts while allowing just 1 run over 8.2 innings of work. Causey got the win to improve to 7-3 on the year after tossing 6 innings out of the bullpen while finishing with 6 punchouts. However, a lot of good, but unfortunately, the nation's longest hitting streak came to an end on Thursday night as Blake Burke failed to record a hit for just the 3rd time this season, ending his program record 31-game hit streak. Guys, the takeaways from last night's opening win over Missouri.
First thing is, this was the best weekend opening pitching performance of the year.
Yes.
And we needed this so bad, and we wanted to see it for so long, because over the past few weeks it kind of been, all right, well, you're going to have to punt game one because the pitching's not going to be up to par, the hitting's not going to be enough to get you over the finish line, you're going to have to win back-to-back games to win the series. Last night, so refreshing just to see Stamos and Causey go out there and go to work. That combo, look, I did not know how well it was going to work. I didn't know how much trust I had in Stamos. He's gone to work in this opening spot on Friday nights, on Thursday nights this week. And Causey, magic out of the bullpen. Yeah. I don't know what it was about him starting. Maybe it was something mental. I don't know, but regardless, it works. So
yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep doing it. Great pitching and hopefully a sign of things to come. The bats, this is what we expected. This is what we're used to. Billy Amick is back. That's great. 2 homers. That's an average night at the office for him these days.
Yeah.
And Christian Moore, he extends that the home run lead over Blake Burke in the home run record category. I think it's up to 5 or 6 now that he leads in that category.
Yeah.
This was one of the first times it kind of felt like we went back to exclusively scoring on home runs.
Yeah.
Kind of felt like the 2022 team again, where you hit a bunch of home runs and score 10 runs, and, oh, hey, I kind of missed this a little bit. But it was nice to not really have the game in doubt, where you were coming up and had to play small ball. You could just hit home runs, and the game was never in doubt. It was nice. And then, look, it's always good to take care of business on home field.
Yeah.
In SEC play, you needed game one. You got game one. Now you might be able to empty the broom closet this weekend, potentially.
There you go. Yeah. J-Mo?
Yeah, it was great to see Stamos and Causey, get you that many outs. That way you save your bullpen for the rest of the weekend, too. Mm-hmm. And it was just encouraging to see them be able to do that on Thursday night, opening night start. Offense continues to do its thing. I think, if we're not already there, we're on the verge of saying this is the best offense in school history. I mean, they're already surpassing everything the team 2 years ago did. They finished the season off this way. It's clearly going to be the best offense in school history. You know, I've come on here plenty of times, and I've talked about, and, I've beat the drum that I'm worried about if we have enough pitching to win a College World Series.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if maybe do we have enough hitting that it ain't going to matter.
Because, sure.
I mean, they're putting up runs, and they're hitting everything. And, and even when you go look at the national statistics of our pitching, we're top 5 in ERA.
Yeah.
We're top, 11 in batting average against and runs, runs given up. So I keep harping that I'm worried about our pitching, but then I look at the statistics and we're actually not that bad.
Yeah.
No. Like we're getting by. If they can get A.J. Russell back and even just use him as a bullpen piece, that's going to be massive. I'm curious to see the Phillips kid. We saw him for a few pitches in the Kentucky game. I want to see him again.
Yeah,
I want to see
too.
Him build off
I
of what he
too.
Did in that Kentucky game. So I'm hoping that in this series we're able to see him again.
Yeah, so he was in the midweek game last week, right?
Yeah.
And had that big outing. And we were talking about, this is a guy that you could possibly see come postseason time. You got to go deep into your bullpen. This is a guy that could possibly play a big moment. And then last week
he got a save last weekend too, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, and then he comes out against Kentucky and gets a save. So that's huge. Marcus Phillips was big. You were at the game, Blake. What'd you see?
Yeah, if I'm kind of piggybacking off what Jordan just said about the pitching, if this team can get the pitching to click, this team is going to be unstoppable. Yeah. I'll sit next to a Missouri fan. And by the way, the whole entire football team, Josh Heupel was standing all right there in right field.
There you go.
Like cheered and like every time they hit a home run, they went nuts. It was really fun to watch them come out and watch the baseball team. But I was sitting next to a Missouri fan. And he's like, all y'all can do is hit home runs. That's all y'all can do. And I was like, no.
A little bit more.
If you've watched this team this year, you see like Blake Burke is this, he's placing the ball where he wants it. This team can place the ball in the gap. This team can place it where there's, you know, just they're good at it now. They're not just a home run hitting team. And if the pitching is relevant coming down the stretch, then this team is going to be almost unbeatable. I wouldn't say unbeatable, but pretty dead-gum close with the way their bats are hitting right now.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to ask a question real quick. Is there another team in the SEC or around the country that just has elite pitching? Are we just being too harsh?
Arkansas's pitching staff is elite, but then you know on the reverse side of that, their lineup isn't that great.
Right.
So, you know, it's almost like a outside of that team 2 years ago that we all agree should have won the College World Series for Tennessee. It's almost like a give or take kind of. It's like you either have the power hitting and you have okay pitching, or you have really good pitching, but your lineup isn't that great. But Arkansas is really the only one that I know in the SEC that is elite at pitching right now.
Kentucky's staff is good. Kentucky's not elite, but it's good.
I was going to mention Kentucky because after that Kentucky series, I walked away from that series like, dude, Kentucky is a legit like World Series contender.
Their pitching is really
good. They are good.
Well, going into that matchup, you know, I thought the big rubber match was Tennessee's offense versus Kentucky's defense and their pitching, and Tennessee was able to pull through in those last two matchups. But I think comparing last year to this year, I think the big difference is this team does a better job of getting on base, finding a way to keep it in the field, and not having to just use the home run. You know, like that Missouri fan said, all y'all do is hit home runs. Actually, this year's group does a better job getting on base by keeping it in the field.
Yeah. They're top five of batting average.
Yeah.
Number one in the SEC. They're top 10 in on base percentage.
Right? Yeah.
They're top five in doubles. So, yeah, it's not just hitting home runs. It's we get on base and then we hit the home runs to score the runs.
Go watch that Kentucky series.
Yeah.
Especially the last game. We beat them without really smashing the ball at the park.
Yeah.
We placed the ball where we wanted it. We got on base, like you said. And another thing about that game, Missouri, they're just not very good.
No. Not very good.
They look bad.
And, you know, talking about that, you know, looking at what we were talking about earlier, we're like, you know, we still play Florida. Who's the last series that we play? It's Florida, and who else was it? Because I looked this up earlier, and both of our SEC series that we have left.
That's Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt. We're bottom half of the SEC East.
Yeah,
Florida and Vanderbilt right now. Mm-hmm. And
they're not having a good start of the year.
Which is weird.
Yeah, and Arkansas, you know, they have a tough series left. Kentucky has a tough series left. Texas A&M has a tough series left. And you're three games back, you know, for the lead of the SEC right now. So your schedule favors you down the stretch to really, if you can reel off some sweeps potentially against these teams or win two out of three, you're going to be right there in contention to sneak up and win the SEC, you know, that last weekend.
Yeah. Well, let's now switch over to basketball, where the Vols added Akpara yesterday from the portal. University of Tennessee head men's basketball coach Rick Barnes announced Thursday the signing of forward Felix Akpara, a transfer from Ohio State. One of the nation's premier rim protectors, Akpara will join the Volunteers for the upcoming season with 2 years of college eligibility remaining. Akpara is 6'11", 235, and spent two seasons at Ohio State where he played in 70 games and made 45 starts while averaging 5.3 points, 5 rebounds, and 1.8 blocks per contest. Also shot an outstanding 58.6% from the field throughout his tenure as a Buckeye and scored in double figures 12 times, including blocking 3-plus shots 19 times and compiled 2 double-doubles. Now, we talked about Akpara yesterday, Dawson and I did on Overtime yesterday, but I want to get your guys' opinion on this. What does Akpara add for the Vols? Because what we said kind of adds a missing piece to last year's roster, right? You know, that interior defensive presence that can bang with some of the best bigs in the country, like Zach Edey, like Armando Bacot, Tolu Smith out of Mississippi State. Last year, Tennessee would lose a lot of those matchups, and really lose a couple of those games because they were losing the interior battle. What does Akpara add for this Vols squad?
Yeah, to me, when I look at him and I look at his game, you know, we've lost a walkout and we've lost Adu. And when I watch Akpara's film and I look at what he does, to me, he's a combination of both of those players.
Yeah.
He has the size and the shot blocking ability of an Adu, but he's a better shot blocker than Adu. But he also has the strength levels, the high motor, the rebounding ability of what Awaka does. And you add it all in one player. And kind of projecting forward here, you know, looking at who they could potentially add the rest of the way in the portal, you kind of needed that defensive enforcer on the back end to team up with a JP Estrella. You know, I think we all agree, we've talked about in the past, JP is kind of more of an offensive center.
Yeah.
And that was kind of his thing coming out of high school. So what I love about what they're doing here with JP and Akpara is you have guys that are two different type of players.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of match up in games depending on what the matchup is. And you need an enforcer, you know. I mean, if you're going to spread the ball out and play at the high-tempo game that we've talked about way in this past season, you don't – and looking at the guys they're bringing in, and this is something that I'm going to talk – once we're done in the portal, this is something I'm going to talk about, you know, on X, on Twitter, and I'll talk about on here about the guys that we brought in. But if you're going to spread it out and shoot the basketball – you got to have somebody that can play defense.
Yeah.
You got to have somebody that can erase shots at the rim. You got to have somebody that can, you know, score around the rim. I looked this up earlier. 74% of Akpara's shots last year came at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost 10% more than what Adu did. And he shot 69% at the rim, which is more than what Adu did last season.
Yeah.
So he's a better rim player. We've all kind of talked about Adu. I mean, let's be honest, you know, he was kind of soft around the rim at times last year.
Finesse.
Akpara is not that.
No.
He wants to dunk everything.
Yeah.
He's an oop guy, and if he gets it anywhere around the rim, he's taking the rim off when he tries to dunk it. And I love that mentality. You know, defensively, you know, I consider Adu a secondary shot blocker. He comes over and helps on blocks.
Yeah.
Akpar is a man up shot blocker.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at his film again today, I was watching to try to do some things on Twitter, trying to break down his film, and he's very good on pick and roll defense,
mm-hmm.
very, very athletic. He's able to read and react very, very well, get back to his spots very, very well. Rebounds kind of like what Awaka does, kind of out from his space. You know, Awaka attacks the ball no matter where the ball goes. Akpar is the exact same way, high energy. So, you know, is he a better pickup than Adu? And me and Brett had this argument yesterday.
I heard it, yes.
Yeah, me and Brett had this argument. Defensively, yes, he's better than Adu, in my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
As you talked about, he can hold up against the Tolu Smiths, the Johnny Brooms.
Yeah, I don't think that's a hot take either. Yeah.
Now, offensively, he is a work in progress. But my point of view with Brett was this. Adu didn't make that leap until his junior season,
mm-hmm.
right? Akpara was only a sophomore this year, and he showed flashes down the stretch. Down the stretch in his last seven games, Akpara averaged almost 14 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. You can see it on his film that it's here. It's there. Now it comes down to can Rip Barnes this summer get in the gym and get that offensive threat out of him.
Yeah. Blake?
Me and Jordan have talked about this a lot, about last season. If Tennessee were to lose early in the tournament, that it is not on Rick Barnes. And I don't know, it's kind of just popped in my head, but Adu, you saying he's more finesse. This guy is not finesse, as you just mentioned. He's a banger. And Rick Barnes has changed the way he does his offense and has changed the way his whole system works now. And you saw that this year with the likes of Don't Connect and just their offensive play. And Adu was that weak point at times because people would just completely – push him around. He was soft. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. He was soft. But Rick Barnes has the potential to make another team like he did last season with this current transfer portal roster that's coming in, because you look at it and it's starting to really piece together, and it's really starting to open your eyes. Like, okay, this might be good. Everyone a couple weeks ago was like, "What's going on?
Yeah,
everything's on fire."
Yeah,
but this is really starting to come together. The pieces are really starting to click, and it's looking pretty promising with the addition of him. So I like it.
Let me add one more thing, if I can. On the defensive side, too, another thing that I like is his ability to block shots allows you to be way more aggressive on the perimeter. You can jump passing lanes now because now you know on the back end you have somebody that can erase your mistakes.
Yeah.
So this is gonna, you know, we had talked about this a little bit when this season about a 3-point defense.
Yeah.
I would expect it to not change because you're still going to be aggressive on the perimeter because you know now if, okay, if Zakai tries to shoot a passing lane to get a steal and a guy drives it, there's a guy on the back end now that's going to erase that mistake for you.
I do wonder, though, Vescovi, as limited as he was offensively this past year, he got it done defensively. You also lose Josiah Jordan-James, who's a really good defender. Now, Dubar is a good defender as well. Yep. So I expect there to be, not a big drop-off there. Question is, this kind of moves into our next topic here. As the roster currently stands, where the Vols need to go from here. I don't know much about Chaz Lanier's defense. I know what he does offensively. Will there be a big drop off from Lanier's defense compared to what we had with Vescovi this year? I know there will be a big increase offensively, but defensively, do you think Lanier will be able to make a seamless transition there?
That will be something that we'll have to watch, I think.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't know much about his defense because you turn his highlight tape on and
it's just none of the buckets.
Yeah, it's him getting buckets. So that's definitely something that we're going to have to pay attention to this season. But I also think, too, something that can kind of counteract that a little bit is I fully expect Meshack to start at the three this season.
Okay.
So, he's going to get way more minutes this year than he got last year. So I think, maybe you can still be equal and the same on the defense because now you have Meshack in a more prominent role.
Yeah.
And that's going to help your defense out. You can kind of – with Zakai, we all – he's really good on defense. Meshack is an elite on defense. I would say Akpar is elite on defense. You can kind of get away with having potentially a Lanier on the offensive end that may not be – same thing as with Dalton Knecht last year. Dalton Knecht wasn't great on defense, but you put him out there because of how elite he was on the offensive end.
Yeah.
Lanier, if you're able to add him, that is a small concern, but I also think that if you can surround him with elite defensive pieces, then it's not going to be that big of a factor.
Yeah. Great stuff. All right, when we come back, we got to hit a quick break real quick. When we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
A wave of pure refreshment and a variety of flavors. From the originals like black cherry and mango to new flavors like passion fruit and blackberry. Crafted using our unique brew pure process, White Claw delivers a crisp taste with only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and only 2 grams of carbs. Check out your favorite retailer in store or online for White Claw variety packs, single flavor packs.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. when they're lighting up a scoreboard, printed on a jersey, or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers, and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Friday afternoon. We appreciate you listening along with us. Great conversation so far in the first hour. Now it's time for our best bets of the night, and I'll begin with Suns first half minus three tonight, taking on the Timberwolves. The Suns return home after falling down 2-0 in the series. To give you a quick stat real quick, playoff teams on a losing streak of exactly two games are 223-152-9 against the spread in the first half of that next game. Suns playing at home, hoping to get that offense rolling once again, using that small ball lineup. Durant, Booker, and Beal, really tough outing in game two. I expect them to come out hot in this one.
First one for me, I've got double player props for you in this Bucks-Pacers game that's going on now. I've had to audible a little bit. I was going to take Siakam. He's got six at the break for Indianapolis, so I'm gonna audible. Give me Miles Turner to score 30-plus. He's got 15 at the break, and get that at plus 440 on FanDuel. Great odds there. And then plus 350 for Chris Middleton, 35-plus. He's got 19 at the half. Damian Lillard goes out hurt. Tough break for Milwaukee, but they need somebody to step up. Chris Middleton's done it in the past. He can do it again. Middleton to score 35-plus.
I have one, and it's just for tomorrow. I'm going to take Miami plus 9.5 against Boston in Miami. I think Boston does win the game, but I think with it being back in Miami and it being tied 1-1, the crowd is going to be really, really into it. And I think Miami's been really, really good on defense this entire season. I think they'll be able to hang around in that game, especially late, and be able to cover 9.5. We've talked about a lot on here. Big numbers like that in the NBA, that's usually a pretty good chance of covering for the underdog there. So I'm going to take, potentially a backdoor cover by Miami plus 9.5.
All right, those are best bets of the night. Suns first half, minus three for me. Dawson?
I had the double player prop, Middleton 35-plus, Miles Turner 30-plus. I had a couple more. But
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We were going around the table, and okay, I got lost. For the Mavericks game tonight, Kyrie 25-plus and Dallas win is at plus 144. Kyrie Irving should score 25 in tonight's game.
Yeah.
You want better odds? Luka 35-plus in a Dallas win is at plus 176. I like both of those. And then the Suns at minus 5.5. You got to have it if you're Phoenix.
Yeah. Any more for you, J-Man?
No, I just had the Miami one.
All right, those are our best bets. We'll try this again. Those are our best bets of the night. Suns first half minus three for me, and the player props from Dawson. All right, when we come back, we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise. Stay right here on Overtime.